morning, I'll convene the hearing. Mr. Hunt, you're first up.
Thank you very much. The doors are locked. So no one can get away. Well, welcome to Queenstown. So, despite what it says in front of you, I'm not David. I'm Phil Hunt, a less educated farmer and the current president of Federated Farmers Otago. I may sound like David for most of this statement. I reside at Mangawira within the Queenstown-based district. Otago Federated Farmers is broadly supportive of this plan. Definitions. A large number of our submissions relating to the provisions within this hearing have been addressed in other hearing streams. Our submissions and further submissions on specific definitions have been addressed through the Rural and Energy and the Energy and Utilities hearing stream. Our submissions included concerns that the proposed definition of building would capture irrigation infrastructure. As discussed in the office report at Section 8, this concern has been addressed through Preface Note 1/2014. We had further concerns that the definition proposed for Form Road would not appropriately distinguish between publicly and privately owned roads. As the officer's report discusses at Section 11, this concern is addressed in that the definition of road is the same as that outlined at Section 315 of the Local Government Act 1974. This sufficiently addresses our concerns in relation to the definition for Form Road. Natural hazards. We have submitted in support of two specific objectives in the proposed natural hazards chapter, objective 28.3.1 and objective 28.3.2. In both instances, we supported the wording as proposed. As we considered the objectives and the subsequent policy struck a good balance between focusing on risks to human well-being while at the same time not being unnecessarily onerous for rural land use. The officer's report proposes amendments to the wording of Objective 28.3.1 to focus more on risks rather than effects. As the objective appropriately focuses on risk posed by natural hazards to the community and the built environment, we support the proposed amendment. Whole of the plan. Federated Farmers has focused our submissions on specific provisions of the plan. However, in the introduction to our initial submissions, we outlined our support for the overall approach of the plan. In particular, we have supported the specific recognition of the significant contribution primary production makes both directly and indirectly to the economic, social, and cultural well-being of the district. The Queenstown Lakes District is unique in terms of the relative value placed on rural landscapes and rural amenity, and the importance of these amenity values. Farmers, farming practices, and economic viability of farming are critical for the management and retention of those positive values. The district plan plays an important part in enabling the ongoing economic viability of farming, in that if the provisions are inappropriate or onerous, they can impose significant and unnecessary costs. Importantly, these costs can include costs resulting from uncertainty where provisions are unclear or reliant on subjectivity. While we have some residual concerns with specific provisions, as a broad view, we consider the proposed plan appropriately recognises and enables primary production activities where appropriate. Overall, the proposed provisions relating to rural areas moving to a more permissible approach for expected, reasonable, and compatible activities in the rural area. There is also greater certainty and less subjectivity in the proposed plan. This is of significant benefit to plan users, but is a double-edged sword. On one hand, this greater certainty reduces the ability for some land use decisions to be made, thereby imposing significant opportunity costs for farmers. However, we consider the need for certainty and the broader issues facing the district outweigh these costs, particularly given the overall more enabling approach to compatible or expected activities in the rural areas. For example, had there been more certainty and less subjectivity around Indigenous vegetation, then perhaps we would have had no need for the Dougal Innes case in the Environment Court. It is also wise to define areas for urban growth so that a plan can be made for the infrastructure to service this growth, for example, roads, sewage, and water resources. The background behind this is that the Otago Regional Policy Statement currently under mediation is where we are seeking district and city planning to consider the impacts on water supply when considering urban expansion. There is one area of the opposite report relating to the entire plan which we would like to specifically support. This is issue 7, avoiding conflicts between water-based activities and surrounding uses. The officer's report recommends that issues relating to water allocation remain a regional council function. We fully support this recommendation, particularly given the range of Otago Regional Council's water quality and quantity-related policies, which are currently in the consultation or early implementation phase. We consider any additional provisions along the lines of those sought by these submitters would both be unnecessary and unwieldy. And David has offered any technical questions that I can't handle to get back to you promptly. He sent me a text as I got here. I'm not sure whether he trusts my ability.
Only one question, Mr. Hart. You interpolated a reference to Federated Farmers' stance on the RPS. Could you tell me a little about where you're coming from on those appeals?
They're currently under mediation, and so I guess what we're trying to do is within the regional policy statement, is just get some clarity in terms of where infrastructure needs to be going in terms of urban planning, so that farmers have clarity to make their decisions on.
So, should I correctly assume that Aurora is there pushing its position for Alliance and Federated Farmers?
Absolutely.
It's pushing its opposition to Aurora's position.
It's something that I think, not just in Otago, but within the whole country, that we are trying to nut out.
Thank you very much.
Just on the water issue at the very end, I heard you change very carefully that it was the relating to water allocation being the regional council issue. In your view, is there some benefit in the district plan ensuring that future urban development is not designed, is designed in such a way that it doesn't impinge on water quality? That's not an allocation issue.
No.
Or a discharge issue.
I think I did mention quality and quantity. No, I believe that the plan change that are being proposed in terms of 6B, C and D from the regional council will adequately impose conditions on urban planning to get water quality to the same level that is now required by rural users. So our stance is still that the district plan should stay out of that field, and let the regional council have a regional policy that covers it. I guess the one of the complicating factors, if you have farms that have on borders between two districts that get into the water quality phase, then they may be in fact working under three different sets of rules, the regional rules and two district rules. So the regional rules are complicated enough to get your head around without actually having.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now I see that the representative of Bunnings has arrived. Which of you is taking the lead? Because we can hear you now.
All right. Excellent. While the hearing secretary is arranging the paperwork, I can just go through introductions. My name is Daniel Minhanek, Council of the Bunners. To my left, I have Ms. Panther Knight, who's provided planning evidence. To my right, I have Ms. Davidson. From Bunnings. She's here in Mr. Borson's stead, who unfortunately was unavailable to come down today.
Right.
And then on the far right is Mr. Heath, who also provided evidence.
Who's familiar to us?
So I've got some short legal submissions subject to. Your preferences, what I intend to do was to read through these legal submissions and then to ask each of the witnesses to present short summaries of their evidence, just touching on the key points,
yes.
Because that has been pre-exchanged.
Yes, that's our procedural preference.
Excellent. So, turning to my legal submissions, they are presented on behalf of Bunnings and relate to the issue of whether trade supplier and building supplier activities are included in the definition of retail within the plan. A detailed description of Bunnings is outlined in Mr. Borson's evidence. Bunnings operates building improvement stores or do-it-yourself centres that sell building-related products. Bunnings has a total of 53 stores across the country, which are made up of Bunnings warehouses, Bunnings small format stores and trade centres. The store types are differentiated by size and product offering. Increasingly, the larger footprint Bunnings warehouses are replacing the Bunnings small format stores, which have smaller footprints and smaller ranges, to meet customer demand. So the Bunnings warehouses have a gross floor area in the main warehouse of greater than 3,000 square metres, plus parking, and carry approximately 45,000 different product lines for home improvement, DIY, and trade markets. To cater for the broad range of products on offer and the operating requirements, the stores are being designed with a layout that is industrial in nature. Bunnings trade centres service trade professionals, including bulk delivery, directly to construction sites for commercial customers. So 1.4, Bunnings' key concern in this chapter relates to the definition of retail and in particular the inclusion of trade and building suppliers within that definition. This concern was outlined in Bunnings' primary submission, however no substantive response to Bunnings' submission point was provided in the Council's Section 42A report. As such, it's not clear why the Council has rejected that submission point. In the Council's opening submissions, it acknowledges that there is a point of difference, but it doesn't elaborate all as far as what the Council's position is or its rationale for that is, which is a little bit disappointing as far as being able to respond to the Council. In my submission, the definitions are critical to the interpretation and application of the objectives and policies of the proposed plan in its entirety. And the issue with the definition of retail not excluding these activities bites when the Council's policies are implemented which direct where retail activities are to be located. And I do acknowledge that some of these matters are to be dealt with in subsequent hearings as far as the industrial zone provisions and some of those other more detailed provisions. However, at a broad level, the Council's centres-based approach focuses on the enhancement of the centres as the key commercial hubs of the district, which promotes consolidation of retail and commercial activities in town centres. In our submission, the inclusion of trade and building suppliers within the definition of retail will lead to two outcomes that are contrary to the Council's overall strategy. The first is that trade and building supplier activities will be forced to locate in the town centres, which will undermine the Council's objective of locating core retail activities in those areas to create vibrant centres. And then alternatively, and perhaps more likely, trade and building suppliers will be precluded from locating in the district in totality as the industrial nature of the store is not suitable to be located in the town centres. In our submission, the notified definition of retail is not the most appropriate means of achieving the objectives and policies of the plan, nor the purpose of the RMA. And I set out at 1.9 the amendment that is sought by Bunnings. And such an approach is consistent with the approach taken in other recent plan-making processes elsewhere in the country, which reflects a contemporary understanding of how trade and building suppliers operate compared to retail. At 1.11 outlined the evidence that's been filed on behalf of Bunnings. I do make the point in A that Ms. Davidson, who's property development manager at Bunnings, is here for Mr. Forson. And then we have Mr. Heath and Ms. Camp tonight. In terms of the Council's approach to retail, in order to put this issue in context, it is important to understand the Council's broad policy approach and plan, particularly regarding the location of retail activities. So that broad policy approach is outlined in its strategic directions, and as the panel will be aware, the strategic directions set out the overarching strategy direction for the management of growth, land use and development in a manner that ensures sustainable management of the Queenstown Lakes District's special qualities, including the following qualities, and draw your attention in particular to the first one, the vibrant and compact town centres, as well as compact and connected settlements that encourage public transport, biking and walking, and an innovative and diversifying economy based around a strong listed industry. There are a number of the objectives contained within the Council's strategic directions to give effect to the overarching policy, including requirements that the proposed plan recognise, develop and sustain the Queenstown and Wanaka central business areas as the hubs of New Zealand's premier alpine resorts and the district's economy, and recognise, develop and sustain the key local service and employment functions served by commercial centres and industrial areas outside of the Queenstown and Wanaka central business areas in the district. Council's strategic directions further promoted in the individual town centre zones. I set out there what the proposed plan provides for town centres. Importantly, it talks about providing a focus for community life, retail, entertainment, business and services, and also talks about providing a diverse range of visitor accommodation and visitor-related businesses, and refers to the vibrancy and economic viability of the centres. In the Queenstown Town Centre Zone, as an example, there are five objectives to fulfil the purpose of the RMA, and those include objectives that provide that the town centre that remains relevant to residents and visitors alike and continues to be the district's principal mixed-use centre of retail, commercial, administrative, entertainment, cultural and tourism activity, and a compact town centre that's safe and easily accessible for both visitors and residents. In my submission, that context is important to understand when considering whether it's appropriate for trade and building suppliers to be treated in the same way as general retail activities. In my submission, trade and building suppliers are not like other retail stores. They have evolved over the past 10 to 15 years from the traditional hardware store, like small format hammer hardware type stores, which service largely local DIY customers, to much larger format one-stop shops for DIY customers and tradespeople alike. Mr. Heath's evidence states that the evolution of trade and building supplier stores has led to the footprint of the stores increasing by 5 to 10 times. And these changes are not unique to the Bunnings brand. Other businesses like Mighty Mega have also executed new stores throughout the country in the same manner. And I think that's an important point, that we're here for Bunnings, but this is not saying Bunnings is unique. This is about building and trade suppliers in general as a sector. Typical trade and building suppliers such as Bunnings are not the types of core retail activity that has a functional need to locate in town centres to be easily accessible to both residents and visitors, nor is it necessary or appropriate to locate trade and building supplier stores within town centres to maintain their viability and vibrancy. Owing to a range of factors, including their size, site requirements and other particular characteristics, trade and building suppliers do not actively contribute to the amenity of a town centre and may in fact detract from that amenity. Given those factors, Mr. Heath concludes that there is no risk of any consequential adverse retail distribution effects if such stores are located out of centre. Mr. Borson's evidence outlines further characteristics that show how trade and building suppliers are different to other retail. His evidence provides figures of gross floor areas for other Bunnings stores and how the design of the Bunnings building is synonymous with industrial warehousing activities. And Mr. Borson attaches to his evidence three diagrams that show a typical gross floor area and a 2 hectare site size has been used, which you'll hear is right at the lower end of the spectrum for a Bunnings warehouse. Of a Bunnings store would look like in Queenstown CBD, Gorge Road, and on the existing Countdown Queenstown site. These diagrams show that the on average 2 hectares of land required for a Bunnings warehouse is not suitable to be developed within Queenstown's town centre or commercial district area, as it would dominate the limited land space available for fine grain retail and other essential services to locate on. As Mr. Borson states, the nature of trade and building supplier activities and the nature of the products sold tends to require high mass of vehicle movements. In particular, heavy vehicle movements are required for delivery of products and also for customers when purchasing products. Similarly, due to the nature of the goods sold, trade and building suppliers need to provide significant car parking at their stores for customers. Service and parking requirements for a trade and building supplier make it equally less likely that such an operator would want to establish within the core retail district of the town centres with the challenges these locations would present. As Mr. Heath notes, the large format and industrial-like nature of trade and building supplier stores does not fit into a centre environment either spatially or by comparison to other types of retail within that environment, and is no longer appropriate to sit within a retail definition within a planning context. Preserving the notified definition of retail could, in my submission, lead to perverse planning outcomes for trade and building suppliers such as Bunnings, which would effectively lock them out of the market in the district. As identified above, the Council has adopted a census-based approach that promotes the consolidation of retail activities in and around existing town centres to protect the vibrancy and vitality of those centres. The location of trade and building suppliers as a retail activity in town centres identified in the proposed plan would directly conflict with that approach. Using the Queenstown Town Centre objectives as an example, these types of activities are inconsistent with the types of mixed-use activity the Council is promoting within the zones by virtue of their large size and site requirements. They also would not promote the compact form that the Council is seeking to achieve, comprising a range of core retail and essential services, and would in effect force those activities to look elsewhere. On the other hand, if Council were to reject the development of trade and building suppliers in town centres, or equally if it was fiscally impossible, trade and building suppliers may be precluded from locating in the district in totality. Again, this is contrary to the Council's overall strategy. Amending the definition of retail to exclude trade and building suppliers avoids this conflict and is a more appropriate means of achieving the objectives and policies of the proposed plan. Ms. Panther Knight notes in her Section 32 assessment that the clarity and certainty provided by Bunnings' proposed amendments, along with the reduced planning and processing costs associated with that greater clarity and the economic certainty provided by operators like Bunnings, will provide a more efficient and effective outcome than the status quo. That clarity will flow through into the rule frameworks to be developed at later stages of this plan review process. I note at 4.6 that other parts of the proposed plan already distinguish between trade supplier and retail activities, for example, in the business mixed use zone rules. maintaining that same distinction in the definitions of the proposed plan will avoid unnecessary confusion and better give effect to the objectives and policies of these zones. Now, there's nothing novel in the approach being advocated by Bunnings here. In fact, many councils now treat trade and building suppliers differently from other retail activities in their second generation plans. As Ms. Panther Knight identifies, the new plans recently formed in Christchurch, Auckland and Hamilton all distinguish trade and building suppliers from other retail activities. In our submission, the recent significant plan review processes undertaken in those cities demonstrate a consistent acknowledgement of the unique nature of trade and building suppliers compared to other forms of retail. This reinforces the change sought by Bunnings to the definition of retail within the plan. So in conclusion, in our submission, the notified definition of retail, which includes trade and building suppliers, is not the most appropriate means of achieving the objectives of the proposed plan and the purposes of the RMA, as it would inappropriately conflate trade and building suppliers with true retailing activities, would lead to perverse planning outcomes within the district, and it would be inconsistent with the strategic directions of the proposed plan. Bunnings' proposed amendments would avoid those unnecessary and inappropriate planning outcomes and result in provisions that are a more efficient and effective means of achieving those same objectives and purposes of the RMA.
Mr. Montag, I was going to ask Ms. Knight this question, but I'll put it to you, and she can obviously amplify a planning response. It seemed to me, reading the evidence and now the submissions that you've presented, that the issue is only partly excluding trade suppliers from retail, but there's also an issue as to what they are included in. And in a plan framework that in broad terms defines industrial activities, retail and commercial activities, and residential activities, if trade suppliers are excluded from retail, it's obviously not appropriate that they be considered be included in the residential definition. But equally, to my mind, they wouldn't meet the definition of industrial activities either. Has Bunnings made a submission on the definition of industrial activities? I should have looked myself at what your submission said.
Sure. So Bunnings' submission does say that the existing definition framework does not appropriately provide for Bunnings' activities as a general submission point. But in essence, it does seek that Bunnings' activities they clearly fall within the definition of building supplier and trade supplier. The submission also talks of amending the definition of commercial activity, retail activity and large format retail to specifically exclude building suppliers. There isn't a corresponding specific inclusion of these types of activities within the industrial definition. However, if the panel were minded to accept Bunnings' submission that it's not appropriate for it to be for these activities to be included within the retail definition, and it was also of a mind that it wasn't appropriate for Bunnings' activities for building and trade suppliers, because this isn't just about Bunnings, for building and trade suppliers to sit alone and be treated on their own, then as a consequential amendment to removing them from the retail definition, in my submission there would be scope to include them within a more appropriate definition elsewhere if that was seen as being necessary to make the overall planning framework work. Now, I'm sure Ms. Panther Knight may have some further comments on that.
Thank you.
Please continue, like, rather than wait for Ms. Panther Knight to come up. If you could amplify council submissions to assist me, that would help.
Certainly, thank you for the opportunity. So I think the crux of it comes back to the fact that trade suppliers haven't sat comfortably within either industrial or retail definitions in the past. And I think in the circumstance where there's a specific definition proposed in terms of the proposed plan, the trade supplier and building supplier definitions which work together, then it's wholly acceptable that that can be a standalone definition. I agree with you that the current industrial activity definition wouldn't cover the trade supplier and building supplier because it talks specifically about manufacturing on site and processing, which is not part of the trade supplier and building supplier activity. The reason I think a more specific or bespoke definition like this proposed is acceptable here is to avoid trying to shoehorn this activity into either retail or industrial. So I don't consider it necessary to fall into either camp. And in fact, obviously, I consider it's important to exclude it from retail and then allow for it as a specific activity category in zones.
That prompts me to ponder that, picking up on your scope point, Mr. Mahoney, you will have noted that among the notified Chapter 3 strategic policies, there is a policy that says, in effect, only industrial activities in industrial zones. Which makes me wonder, on your summary, I take it you haven't submitted on that. So is there a danger that you're going to fall between two stools? There's no land, as far as I'm aware, no bare land at any rate, that is available for a hybrid. It's either industrial or it's commercial. I suppose it's the airport mixed use. That wouldn't fit.
Business mixed use.
Big business mixed use.
Specifically provides for trade supply.
So, the conundrum I'm wrestling with is that while I can understand the logic of your submission, do you end up in a dead end? Or if we were to accept it, do we end up in a dead end saying, well, the only answer is that, well, it's not retail, it's not industrial, it's a nothing, it's in Cromwell.
Or it's not in the district.
My point is Cromwell's the other side of the district boundary.
It is, yeah.
And so that's what I'm wrestling with, that you said, well, you can make a consequential amendment, but I suppose the proposition I might put to you is that it's a big consequential amendment, given that, as I say, there's a strategic policy not to devote industrial land to non-industrial activities. So I'm wrestling with that conundrum and inviting you to tell me what's the solution in both a scope and a scope sense and in a practical reality of, well, what could this panel do if it were to accept the wisdom of your submission. What could it do to actually, in a meaningful way, carve out the opening that you're looking for, which is that there is somewhere for big box trade suppliers to establish themselves?
Maybe Mr. Minhinnick to address the scope.
Can you speak to me up, please?
Maybe Mr. Minhinnick to address the scope point, but considering administering the plan and how to draw trade suppliers through to the industrial zone provisions, which I appreciate comes down the track with the district plan review. Perhaps it's not appropriate to amend the industrial activity definition, but maybe we give that some thought, whether there's scope or not. But the important thing in my mind in terms of administering the plan is consideration of effects, the nature of the activity and how it is best suited to industrial character. And in doing so, providing for it at the activity status level of the zone provisions, and having regard to, at the later stage, in forming the objectives and policies specific to the industrial zones, or where industrial activity is located, specifically clarifying, as other planes do, that that includes trade suppliers.
I suppose that one of the things that we're looking at is that the industrial zone activity standards are for a further plan process. But the question I put on the table is, will that further plan process in fact be hamstrung? Because if the strategic direction is no non-industrial activities as defined in industrial areas, the next question is, well, where then?
And I think one of the things that also needs to be borne in mind when looking at some of those strategic direction level objectives or policies, they are at a high level, and so there is a question of whether they are tied very specifically and restrictedly to industrial activities as defined, because inevitably there will be other activities that locate within an industrial zone, whether those are utilities or things like that, and they might not fit neatly within the industrial activity definition, but again, I don't think anyone would doubt that those types of activities would be entirely appropriate to be located wherever they're needed across the district. And so, while there might be a policy that, or an objective that talks about retaining the industrial zone for industrial activities, if that is seen as being at a high level and not specifically tied to industrial activities as defined, then that might be one way through, so that when it comes to a later plan process to look at the industrial zone provisions themselves, that there is a little bit more wiggle room for the various activities that might not fit within one of the neat categories of retail, industrial, residential.
Well, pursuing that line of thought a little further, yesterday we discussed with Ms. Leith the status of the definitions, and her position, her advice to us, was that where terms are defined, the defined meaning is used wherever in the plan the relevant words are employed. And in fact, she's suggesting a note that says that at the start of the definition section. Should I infer that your submission would be that that wouldn't be appropriate?
Well, it may well be that following this hearing in relation to the definitions and looking back at other aspects of the plan, it might be that some of the terminology used elsewhere in the plan doesn't still fit with wherever some of these definitions might end up through this particular hearing process.
So call a spade a spade. Would you advocate leaving some wriggle room in the application of the definitions?
Correct. Particularly in relation to higher level objectives, where through this particular hearing process there are various changes being made and tweaks around the edges, or more fundamental changes to some of the definitions. And if there's been terminology used at earlier hearing processes that on reflection now don't necessarily reflect or don't achieve the same outcome they did following these changes to definitions, then in order to ensure that the plan is able to be administered in an efficient and effective way, there may well be situations where wiggle room is necessary.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if we ignore, if we don't take notice of what the goods sold actually are, what is the distinguishing feature between Pattern Save and Bunnings? They're both huge boxes, have lots of car parking, sell to the public, and they also wholesale. So where's the distinguishing feature?
So there is, as far as the size of the goods that are being transported there frequently, the requirements for motor vehicle access by customers, whereas supermarkets, while they do have a large motor vehicle-based customer usage, there is still a large walk-up component, which you don't find with...
I'm specifically saying Pack and Save. I'm not saying supermarkets in general. I doubt that you'll find much walk-up to Pack and Save, especially in Queenstown.
And then beyond those aspects, I think that the putting aside the goods that are sold in a Bunnings or another trade centre versus a Pack and Save, that would, I guess, equally apply to potentially other activities that, if you look at what might go on in an industrial activity that is classed within the definition of industrial activities and some other commercial or retail activities, and looking at, if you take away what the goods and services are that are being sold there, you might well find similarities with a number of those other definitions as well. Well, a number of those other activities, sorry. And so I think the nature of the goods being bulky and those sort of things is an important distinction factor as well. And so you can't ignore the nature of the goods sold as well.
Okay. Now, what about the... I'm quite surprised that you didn't deal with this in your submissions. What is the definition of retail? Not the definition of the district plan. What is the definition of retail?
Well, I don't have the benefit of a dictionary or a range of different plans in front of me.
I have the advantage that I can... In the Merriam-Webster, it says to sell in small quantities directly to the ultimate customer, and various others, it's to sell to the ultimate customer. So as I understood the evidence presented, that is a big part of the Bunnings activity, and the same as it is for Megamite 10. And I'm wondering, really, and I also noted that Ms. Pankey might set up for us a provision in the Auckland Unity Plan. I'm wondering, really, whether we're splitting hairs and that we've actually got a subset of retail which is specifically defined, and that the fact that it's specifically defined allows it to be specifically identified in appropriate areas. It already is in the mixed use zone. There is an area in Waikato called Three Parks, which is the council in a reply to the strategic chapter's recommended policies, providing that as being a big box retail centre. Now, if this submission was accepted and it wasn't retail, then suddenly you'd find yourself excluded from the one obvious place in Wanaka to locate a Bunnings. So it brings us back to the point that Commissioner Robinson made, is maybe you're actually better to push for the application of the trade supplier activity into appropriate places.
And certainly that in subsequent planning processes, that will be a consistent theme as far as Bunnings' approach. And I guess this is the, because this is a district-wide definitional issue, that is why it's being pursued here. But certainly take the point that an alternative is to specifically have building and trade suppliers in particular zones, just as it is within the business mix zone, separately identified.
I'm just wondering what advantage is there to anyone in saying it's not retail? I mean, you've suggested that that would force it into the town centres. I mean, that's not realistic.
Exactly.
I mean, Bunnings are not going to buy up 3 hectares of land in either the Wanaka or Queenstown town centre.
No.
Okay, that economic. So we can ignore that. The only areas of land that are on a sufficient scale are actually Franklin Flats or Three Parks.
Mm-hmm.
And the future zoning of those is still to be determined in stage two. I would have thought the more sensible course of action for Bunnings would be to support the mixed use zone application and ensure that in stage two the zoning makes proper provision. And it may be that while areas are zoned industrial, that they should be sought to be zoned mixed use in some of those areas. I don't know the answer yet because I haven't seen what's happening on stage two.
Mm.
But that I don't see that there's any great advantage to anyone in separating the activity out.
I think that I certainly acknowledge that that is one of the options that is available. And I think Mr. Heath would also be able to speak to this as far as looking at these activities and what they have become, that they are industrial in nature and really are industrial type activities. And that is why we're raising it here, and it may well be through those subsequent plan processes that we're also raising a very similar thing, albeit through a different outcome being sought because it's about zoning or something else. But it is that these are not typical retail activities and should not be treated the same way as other retail activities. That in a nutshell is Bunnings' case. And so then when you step back and you go, when you look at how the plan is setting out from a definitional perspective, how it's going to administer this plan across the board. If you start off with a broad retail definition which specifically includes these activities, then given the approach taken in lots of other parts of New Zealand where there is an acknowledgement that these are more industrial in nature and they shouldn't be treated the same way as those other retail activities, then saying, why are they being included within this definition? I suppose.
Well, it doesn't specifically include them.
It doesn't specifically include them, but it is because of the broad way that it's framed, which I guess when you look at what your the definition that you read out, which is about going to the end user, and given that a large part of the Bunnings operation is going to tradespeople, and so it is a business-to-business operation rather than going to the end consumer, that is unique as well, and does set it apart from other traditional retail activities.
Yes, I don't disagree with that. What I'm failing to see is what downside there is for retail to remain as it is defined and trade and building suppliers to have a separate definition, albeit possibly including being included in retail. From all the material that's been presented to us from the council to date, the only zone where this activity, the scale of Bunnings could establish would be the business mixed use zone. Council have recommended in the other retail zones limits on the size of retail activity. So there's no potential adverse effect from Bunnings locating in those areas. There remains the potential for Bunnings to establish in a mixed use zone. I can't see that the community is disadvantaged. I can't see that Bunnings is disadvantaged. I'm just wondering how it improves the plan that potentially, as Commissioner Robinson said, leave you in a not just Bunnings and not just Mitre 10, but other building and trade suppliers, of which there are a lot in this district, in a black hole.
Mm. And we are all, I guess, a little hamstrung because of the way that the stage nature of the plan being developed, that we're all having to shadow punch as to what, say, the industrial provisions might actually look like. And so we're all having to, as far as the position being taken at this hearing, it is trying to crystal ball gaze a little bit as far as what provisions might end up looking like for an industrial zone, for example, and trying to make sure that the definitions that are being set through this process do potentially work and appropriately provide for these sorts of activities down the track.
Isn't there also the potential in stage two, when other areas are zoned, to seek that they be zoned in mixed use?
Certainly that's a possibility.
Okay, thank you.
So unless there are any other questions, I was going to hand over to Ms. Davidson now just to speak to some of the key points as far as the corporate evidence that's been filed.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Davidson, Property Development Manager for Bunnings.
Excuse me, your Christian name, I didn't quite catch that.
Elizabeth Davidson.
Thank you.
I'm the Property Development Manager for Bunnings and have been for the past 5 years. Bunnings has three store formats, the Bunnings Small Format, Bunnings Warehouse and Bunnings Trade. The warehouse format is the main format being rolled out across the industry. The warehouse design, look, feel and operation aligns with the industrial type development in nature. The traffic generated, including delivery of bulky goods and level of truck movements, are aligned with an industrial activity. Customers visit our site by vehicle, which is reflective in the car parking layout and amount of parts we provide to meet this demand. Page 7 of David's evidence clearly shows the scale of our operation, outlining total GFA and associated car parks we would provide. These factors support the need for large sites found typically in industrial zones, and we, as a design, is utilitarian, including the need for access to high profile net roading networks. As you can see on page 10, this clearly shows the overlay of a minimum 2 hectare blocks typically required for our operation and how it's not appropriate or attainable to amalgamate sites easily.
The question I have reading Mr. Borson's now, your evidence, is, and I think this is a point that Council showed, based on your national figures, what proportion of Bunnings Warehouse customers are in fact trade customers, quantified in numbers and dollars?
The trade part of our business is a very significant part. And that's continually growing with overall business growth.
But is it 10%? Is it 50%? Is it 80%? Give me some sense of that.
If you consider it trade competition, I'm prepared to take it in writing and have it.
I don't have the specific breakdown, but I'm aware that it is a very significant portion of the business.
Okay. But I also understand that there is sensitivity around those numbers.
I can understand.
But I suppose a qualitative description gives me no sense, because the follow-up question is really, if you didn't have a retail sale to ordinary DIY customers, if you were just trade suppliers, what difference would that make to your format? For instance, would the car park be halved? Would it be 20% of the... Because looking at the figures of Mr. Borson's evidence, the thing that strikes me is not the size of the building, but the number of car parks and the space that takes up. And the lay impression I have, with the benefit of no real understanding other than having shopped at Bunnings, is that a substantial proportion of those car parks are, but for the DIY user who rocks up, like throws something in the boot and drives away. And so hence, can you give me some sense of those sort of issues?
Perhaps to hopefully assist, if you were to take away that retail component, or the direct public component, if you frame it in that way, you're left with a store that probably is more closely resembling a Carter's or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that, although of a larger scale, if you look at what the trades, the TSS component of the Bunnings is, it is still a very substantial size.
And there is quite a significant crossover as well, as what you're sort of deeming what general customer retail, what they would purchase. There is a large overlay with what the trade customers would purchase. So
it's the difference between the individual customer like me who wanders in and buys one screw and to put up a picture, and your trade customer who wanders in and buys 500.
Correct.
They still require the same product.
Yes.
And still often require the same car park, particularly if it's a building on its own or something like that. So then the Carter's example helps, but I don't think it is a full picture.
Placement is probably a better example than this description.
And I suppose the following the line of thinking, are the car park facilities at those sort of facilities noticeably smaller than Bunnings would provide, given its hybrid nature that you've described?
Yeah, it would be, but excuse me, I think that's also possibly representative of what portion of the overall industry we share. Bunnings is a significant player in that, and whilst I don't have those figures in terms of customers, we are well patronized in terms of overall customers.
So it's really a combination, as far as the differences between a Placemakers and a Bunnings, as far as car park size, for example, it's a combination of potentially the size of the trade component, but also the fact that Bunnings has the direct public component as well. So there is a combination of two factors at play.
Just to summarise some question, in terms of the vehicles that the general public would use and the vehicles that a trade person would use. A trade person would obviously be a four-wheel drive and maybe have a trailer on the back, versus typically a car for the general public. So the car park configuration or sizing maybe is slightly different as well. But I'm not a traffic engineer. So
and in Queenstown you might find a much higher percentage of 4x4s and
yes, exactly.
From the general public.
Than the general public. That was all I had. Thank you. In those days.
I think I mentioned placemakers, and you've said be distinguished. What is it that distinguishes Bunnings from placemakers?
The biggest thing would be the scale, the product ranges that we provide would be the two key items that would differentiate us. I think in David's evidence he talks about Bunnings' three pillars, with one of them which is the widest range. So you can go in and get, we will have from the cheapest to the most expensive toilet seats and pots for your nursery, we'll have all those.
I have reached the Bunnings and all.
Exactly, so I'm preaching to the choir. Whereas placemakers don't necessarily abide by that pillar, so therefore don't have to provide as big a range and as many products.
Right. Now, are you familiar with the fact that the two placemakers in this district are both on industrial zone land?
Yes.
So they would be classified as the same type of activity as Bunnings, though, wouldn't they, as trade building suppliers? Bring me back to my earlier point. Well, other than that, I don't have any questions.
And I guess that again goes to the point that the reality is that these activities are often located in industrial zones, and that is being seen by the market and by the consenting authority and granting consent as an appropriate place for those to locate. And so it's looking at how you set up a framework that continues to allow that. If you've got, and one of Bunnings' concerns is if you're still including them within the definition of retail, and where there is a general direction against having retail activities located in those industrial zones, it sets up another hurdle for that to potentially occur.
I'm going to return to the morning agenda soon, but I thought perhaps that Ms. Panther might consider whether it might be more sensible to amend the definition of trade and building suppliers to make it clear that it's a crossover between retail and industrial activities, because that is what it is that I think you're really seeking, rather than removing it from retail. And I suspect that might be within the scope of your submission, because it wouldn't adversely affect any other building and trade supply.
Certainly.
You might like to think about that as an alternative.
Certainly, I appreciate that indication. We'll consider that in the math and I will in particular over the adjournment.
And so adjourn until 11:30.